Three, two.
707, Albert N. Wilmarth. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by bunnyslippers.com and founditemclothing.com. Hey, Australia and New Zealand and anywhere that is Chile right now, keep your feet warm and cute this winter with some Cthulhu slippers from bunnyslippers.com and get your favorite screen-accurate shirts from your favorite films from founditemclothing.com. Written and edited by Daniel Spitzer, audio by Seraphie and Daniel Spitzer, music by Kevin MacLeod. PGTTCM is part of the Dark Myths Collective.
You can find them at darkmyths.org.
We are engaged in an ongoing discussion of the Cthulhu mythos and its timeline regarding Earth. To be part of it, contact us at pgttcm@gmail.com or join us on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for PGTTCM. And remember to rate and review and subscribe to PGTTCM on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, listeners, do you want to help the show out? One way that you can do that is going to pgttcm.podbean.com and hit the patron button.
Donate too and get something cool each month. Early release episodes, unique audio content, otherwise unreleased banter. Contact us about the sticker cult or donate a few dollars to paypal.me/pgttcm. Greetings, listeners. It is we, D.B. Spitzer and Seraphie, here to talk to you once again about the Cthulhu mythos, its books, its monsters, its unfortunate human casualties, its timelines in general, and even its tangential bits like the dreamlands or things of a weird nature or things that are Lovecraftian leaning. Once more, we head into those dark woods, further feeling those malevolent forces upon us. Once again, we walk down the lightless stone staircase in the middle of nowhere.
Nowhere.
Check out the show's merch table at pgttcm.threadless.com. You can find lots of cool shirts and mugs and stuff there. All original designs of D.B. Spitzer. Or check out the store link on pgttcm.com.
And we have new shirts in there, actually. Ooh. Instead of just the logo, we now have a bunch of weird fiction authors.
Oh, yeah.
As the shirts. Ambrose Bierce, mm-hmm. Algernon Blackwood, and a whole bunch more. Even H.P. Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard, Clark Ashton Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Series 2 will have things like, I don't know, maybe some Octavia Butler, some Augie Dog Derleth, maybe some Poe, because everyone's like, how come you never talk about Poe?
Well, we'll cover him at some point.
Maybe Lord Dunsany. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, really, could we do a tribute to Terry Pratchett?
Probably.
He's an interesting guy to draw, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, he wears a hat and got a beard.
Okay.
Real character.
All right.
Remember to check out the books review on Amazon.com, and why not use our Amazon link and look for the Strange Behaviors Anthology by Nihilism Revisited, and look for the micro story by D.B. Spitzer.
Psst. Hey, you. Do you like the Tales from the Crypt series? Do you like spooky things in general? Then check out the Good Evening Kitties podcast. That's Good Evening Kitties podcast. G-O-O-D E-V-E-N-I-N-G K-I-D-D-I-E-S podcast. Each week, I'll review a new episode from the TV series The Tales from the Crypt. Find me on Podbay, Podbean, or iTunes. That's the Good Evening Kitties podcast. Check it out today.
All right, so we just finished watching.
Well, we didn't finish watching.
Well, we just got to the part that we needed to get to do this podcast.
That's true.
Of watching The Whisper in Darkness in anticipation for this episode about Albert Wilmarth.
Yeah, Albert N. Wilmarth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the N stands for Neil?
None your business.
None your business. I love it.
Noise.
Noise, yeah. Or yeah. Perhaps it's nincompoop.
Yeah.
All right. So watched it. I have to say, it's a pretty interesting story. Has a lot of creepy. The movie's amazing.
Yeah. No. H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society did a heck of a job.
Yep. Nice models. Good, like, use of landscape.
Yeah, no, the thing I'm not a huge fan of is is the miscellaneous friends and the debate with Charles Fort. And, you know, that was fun and everything like that. But I just think it would have been better if it would have been, I don't know. I don't think it would have been better, but...
But Daniel, if they cut that out, you wouldn't have the smiling, slimy guy who's definitely an axe murderer.
Oh, yeah, I know, but it's like, that has nothing to do with the story except for,
but,
like,
I mean, the way that
cranking out
around
explanatory
and, like,
dialogue.
Smiles at everybody, like, yeah. Let's go to the murder room.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I just feel like there could have been cooler ways to deal with it. Like,
yeah.
Even if it was just, like, a bunch of stodgy old professors arguing about stuff in the break room at Miskatonic University. There was other stuff, like... Chekhov's biplane, I thought was a bit ridiculous.
Well, like, I mean, otherwise, then he gets in the biplane later, and they're like...
Yeah, no, you establish that before you get... You establish the fact that he knows how to fly a biplane at some point in time.
Yeah.
And then have him stumble across something, or be like, oh, hey, I see an air sock.
Do you feel like maybe the biplane should have been in it earlier? Like, something along the lines of, like, he had a model plane on his... desk in the university, and somebody's like, what a nice plane, and he's like, oh, I go flying
just
the
like the one
sometimes.
I have in, you know, yeah, just like the one I have at the Boston airfield, you
yeah,
know, I mean,
just like the one I occasionally take out on the weekends, yeah. And that establishes the whole thing, but it's a little less obvious.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe yeah, like more obvious.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna have like a bunch of dudes standing around spewing out explanatory dialogue, you know what, This is not a...
This is not a review of the story, is it?
No, this is not a review of the Whisper in Darkness DVD.
Yeah, so...
Which is great. I really do like it.
It's really amazing. And frankly, I really, really love the old feeling of it. Like, it's an H.P. Lovecraft story, so the fact that they went all period with it, and even, like, period filming techniques, like, it probably would have been cheaper to do a lot of that digitally,
yeah.
In that it's cheaper to do digital than it is to make a model, usually, unless you're like, I've got all this plaster of Paris and nowhere to use it. Just not the usual thing these days. But, like, I really admire it. It's really beautifully done.
No, very ambitious, very nice. I mean, I bought it as soon as I possibly could. I went and saw it at the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival in Portland as soon as I could.
Purchased it.
I was super excited.
Man, it would be fun to see it up on a big screen.
It was.
Oh, wow.
Also, so is the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society's rendition of The Call of Cthulhu. Audiobooks.
Yeah?
Is the way to go with H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, you know you're right, and I should just switch over to that. I'm almost done re-listening to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell for the seventh time.
Well, maybe you should listen to some H.P. Lovecraft just to, you know, brush up on stuff.
You know, I think I should. I have to say, though, I am, well, it's not a Susanna Clarke's fan site.
Yeah, no. But I will say, if one was going to brush up on their H.P. Lovecraft via audiobook, a great way to do it would be going to audibletrial.com/PGTTCM.
Oh, yes.
You know, just got to plug our Audible thing.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the thing about Audible is really nice that you can find a lot of stuff on there. I mean, frankly, just about anything that's ever been recorded.
Yeah.
And you can find books and podcasts and radio plays.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know about podcasts or radio plays.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really great. Audio dramas, all sorts of stuff that's been recorded and performed. Ooh. You can find lots of different things there.
Probably better quality than the LibriVox recordings that we put up.
It's possible, although you brush those things up beautifully.
I do. I try.
Okay. Let's get this show on the road.
Let's get
man.
This show on the road, yeah.
Welcome to the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
No, but what do you think of the story itself of
A Whisper,
Whisper in Darkness?
I really like it. It's creepy.
Uh-huh.
It makes a lot of sense in that it's totally within the mythos in that, like, you have these creatures that have a purpose beyond us, and they're working towards that purpose.
Yes.
And they're like, well, we just happen to be here, and I guess if some of you want to come along, but nobody can know.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to, like, be the subject of, you know... They're, like, powerful enough or advanced enough that they are more advanced than human society is at that point. but they're like technologically, but they're not so advanced that we couldn't totally fuck up their plans.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about being humans in science mm-hmm. fiction is like, no matter how technologically advanced you are, humans can fuck up your plans, whether it be with the common cold.
Right.
Or, I don't know.
A big rock.
A big rock. Or in case of like, they live, Rowdy Roddy Piper and a shotgun and a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And zero bubble gum.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So
yeah, that's one of the great things about being humans in science fiction is.
Yeah, we fuck everything up.
We fuck everything up.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not always the case in H.P. Lovecraft stories.
Yes.
Only once in a great while does humanity thwart those trying to bring forth, mm-hmm. reawaken the great old ones.
Yeah.
This is not the exception to the regular. As we know, Wilmarth wakes up the next day, spoiler alert, finds a wax mask, wax hands. So, which makes me want to also talk about something. People have assumed that what is posing as Akeley is Amigo.
It could be a human.
It could be a human. It could be something else. An ancient deity.
Really?
What? Whose name starts with an N.
Nyarlathotep?
Possibly. We'll read a part and you tell me if maybe they're talking about Nyarlathotep.
Okay.
So let's get started with Albert N. Wilmarth and his little trek up to the Vermont woods and his bit
scary.
With the Cthulhu mythos in general.
Yeah. Can we talk about the wax cylinder real quick?
Sure.
Totally cool, right?
Yeah, it is.
Man, I love that old kind of technology.
Yeah.
Is the Lord of the Woods, even to and the gifts of the men of Lang. So from the wells of night to the gulfs of space, and from the gulfs of space to the wells of night, ever the praises of great Cthulhu and Sathagua, and of him who is not to be named, even their praises and abundance to the black goat of the woods, Ea Shub-Niggurath, the great, the goat with a thousand young. And it has come to pass that the Lord of the Woods, being 7 and 9, down the onyx steps, tributes to him in the gulf, Azathoth, he of whom thou hast taught us marvel, of the wings of night out beyond space and beyond the, of that, whereof Yoggoth is the youngest child, rolling alone in the black ether at the rim.
Go out among them and find the way down, that he in the gulf may know, to Nyarlathotep, mighty messenger. Lest all things be told, and he shall put on the semblance of men, the waxen mask, and the robe that hides, and come down from the world of seven sons to life.
Nyarlathotep, great messenger, bringer of the strange joy to Yoggoth through the void, father of a million favored ones, stalker among...
An instructor of literature at Miskatonic University in Arkham, Massachusetts, when local newspapers report strange things seen floating in rivers during a historic Vermont flood, Wilmarth becomes embroiled in a controversy about the reality and significance of the sightings, though he sides with the skeptics, blaming old legends about the monsters living in uninhabited hills who abduct people who venture too close to their territory. He receives a letter from one Henry Wentworth Akeley, a man who lives in an isolated farmhouse near Townsend, Vermont. He affirms that he has proof that will convince Wilmarth that he must stop focusing on the race's existence. The two exchange letters, including a... Thank you. Okay. I've read this too.
No sugar in that.
Good point. You want me to start over?
I don't remember where you were, so you can go start wherever you want.
Okay. An instructor of literature at Miskatonic University in Arkham, Massachusetts, when local newspapers report strange things floating in rivers during a historic Vermont flood, Wilmerth becomes embroiled in a controversy about the reality and significance of the sightings. Though he sides with the skeptics, blaming old legends about monsters living in uninhabited hills who abduct people who venture too close to their territory, he receives a letter from one Henry Wentworth Akeley, a man who lives in an isolated farmhouse near Townsend, Vermont. He affirms that he has proof that will convince Wilmerth that he must stop focusing on the race's existence. The two exchange letters, including a record of the extraterrestrial race chanting with human agents, who worship several beings, including Cthulhu and Nyarlathotep, the latter of whom shall put on the semblance of men, the waxen mask, and the robe that hides.
Cool.
The agents intercept Akeley's messages and harass his farmhouse nightly. Akeley and the agents exchange gunfire, and many of Akeley's guard dogs are killed. Although Akeley expresses more in his letters, he abruptly has a change of heart. He writes that he has met with the extraterrestrial beings and has learned that they are peaceful. Furthermore, they have taught him of marvels beyond imagination. He urges Wilmarth to pay him a visit and to bring along the letters and photographic evidence that he has sent him. Wilmarth reluctantly consents.
You will probably call me raving at first, Wilmarth, but in time you will appreciate the titanic opportunity I have stumbled upon. I want you to share as much of it as possible. And to that end must tell you thousands of things that won't go on paper. In the past, I have warned you not to come to see me. Now that it is all safe, I take pleasure in rescinding that warning and inviting you. Can't you make the trip up here before your college term opens? It would be marvelously delightful if you could. Bring along the phonograph record and any of my letters as consultative data. We shall need them in piecing together the whole tremendous story. You might bring the Kodak prints, too, since I seem to have mislaid my negatives and my own prints in all this recent excitement. But what a wealth of facts I have to add to all this groping and tentative material, and what a stupendous device I have to supplement my additions. Don't hesitate. I am free from espionage now, and you will not meet anything unnatural or disturbing. Just come along and let my car meet you at the Battleboro station. Prepare to stay as long as you can, and expect many an evening of discussion of things beyond all human conjecture. Don't tell anyone about it, of course, for this matter must not get to the promiscuous public. The train service to Battleboro is not bad. You can get a timetable in Boston, take the B&M to Greenfield, and then change for a brief remainder of the way. I suggested taking the 410. Pardon this typed letter, but my handwriting has grown shaky of late. As you know, I don't feel equal to long stretches of script. I got this new Corona in Battleboro yesterday. It seems to work very well. Awaiting word and hoping to see you shortly with the phonograph record in all my letters. And the Kodak prints.
Wilmarth arrives to find Akeley in a pitiful physical condition, immobilized in a chair in darkness. Akeley tells Wilmarth about the extraterrestrial race and the wonders they have revealed to him. He also says that the beings can surgically extract a human brain and place it into a canister where it can live indefinitely and withstand the rigors of outer space travel, and shows proof to Wilmarth. Akeley says he has agreed to undertake such a journey and points to a cylinder bearing his name. Wilmarth also listens to a brain in a cylinder as it speaks of the positive aspects of the journey and why Wilmarth should join it on a trip to Yagoth, the being's homeworld. During these conversations, Wilmarth feels a vague sense of unease, especially from Akeley's odd manner of buzzing whispering. During the night, a sleepless Wilmarth overhears a disturbing conversation with several voices, some of which are distinctly bizarre. Once all is silent, he creeps downstairs to investigate. He finds that Akeley is no longer present, but the robe he was wearing is discarded in a chair. Upon a closer look, he makes a horrifying discovery amid the folds of the robe, which sends him fleeing the farmhouse by stealing Akeley's car. When the authorities investigate the next day, they find nothing but a bullet-ridden house. Akeley has disappeared along with all the physical evidence of the extraterrestrial presence. As the story concludes, Wilmarth discloses the discovery from which he fled in terror. Akeley's discarded face and hands. These were utilized by something inhuman to disguise itself as a man. He now believes with a dreadful certainty that the cylinder in that dark room with that whispering creature already contained the brain of Henry Wentworth Akeley. Wilmarth is described as a folklorist and assistant professor of English at Miskatonic University. He investigates the strange events that followed in the wake of historic Vermont floods in 1927. Wilmarth is also mentioned in Lovecraft's At the Mountains of Madness, where the narrator remarks that he wishes he hadn't talked so much with that unpleasantly erudite folklorist Wilmarth at the university. Elsewhere, the story refers to the wild tales of cosmic hill things from outside told by a folklorist colleague in Miskatonic's English department. Wilmarth is the main character in Fritz Lieber's To Arkham and the Stars, written and presumably set in 1966, when the now septuagenarian professor is a chair of Miskatonic Literature's department. Lieber describes him as slender and silver-haired, with a mocking sardonic note, which has caused some to call him unpleasantly rather than simply very erudite. He acknowledges keeping in rather close touch with the Plutonians of Ugothians, and perhaps even old Dyer guesses. Wilmarth remarks in the story, after you've spent an adult lifetime at Miskatonic, you discover you've developed a rather different understanding from the herds of the distinction between the imaginary and the real. A passage from the Whisperer in Darkness contains a series of mythos names, some of which are briefly mentioned but are never explained.
I found myself faced by the names and terms that I had heard elsewhere in the most hideous of connections. Yuggoth, Great Cthulhu, Sathagwa, Yog-Sothoth, Ral'yeh, Nar-Lethotep, Azathoth, Hastur, Yin, Lang, the Lake of Hali, Bethmora, the Yellow Sign, Lemur, Cathonus, Bran, and Magnum Innominandium, Magnum Innominandium.
While most of these places and things are well-known figures of the mythos, a few are harder to pin down. Among them, Bethmora was a fabled city in the eponymous story of Lord Dunsany, a favorite author of Lovecraft. Bran is an ancient British pagan deity. However, in this context, Lovecraft was referring to Bran MacMorn, last king of the Picts in Robert E. Howard's Sword and Sorcery fiction. The reference is an homage to Howard, one of his correspondents. Lemur may refer to Lemuria, a fabled land bridge to a sunken continent in the mythos. Cthulhos is an Atlantean sorcerer, the titular character of Robert E. Howard's story Skullface. A fan had written to Howard asking if Cthulhos was derived from Cthulhu, and Howard mentioned this in a letter to Lovecraft. Lovecraft liked the thought and replied that he might adopt the name into the mythos in the future. Magnum Innominandium means the great, not to be named in Latin. Yan probably refers to Yan Ho in the story Through the Gates of the Silver Key, 1934, a collaboration between Lovecraft and E. Hoffman Price. Yan Ho is a dreadful and forbidden city on the plateau of Lang, but it also may refer to the fictional city of Yan in the weird short story The Maker of Moons, published in 1896 in the collection of the same name by one of Lovecraft's most favorite authors, Robert W. Chambers. Speaking of Chambers, next week we will be reading King in Yellow.
All right, so, Sarah, yes. What did you think of the story? The Whisperer.
The Whisperer in Darkness?
Yeah, that one.
Well, I really liked the movie.
Yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
What did you think of the story summary and the bits and pieces that...
Oh, I liked liked that too. Of course, the usual complaints of where the heck are all the ladies?
Yeah.
And
aren't you glad there aren't any ladies in this?
You know, it is nice to know that there's not like some horror that comes out of a female body in this film.
Yeah.
Or in this story, that's true.
Or a female trapped with some horror
for the rest of her life. Yeah. Yes, that's also nice. It's nice to see that like this. I mean, it's not like it's like a bunch of dirty women who are, you know, consorting with the aliens.
Nope.
It's actual just white people.
Yeah.
There was a line in the reading. You said something like promiscuous. Okay, here it is. It's in the letter that Akeley is sent to Wilmarth, and it's do not hesitate. I am free from espionage now. And at the end of this paragraph, he says, do not tell anyone about it, of course, for this matter must not get to the promiscuous public, which is yet another reference to H.P. Lovecraft's fear of mixing and how there's a lot of different kinds of people in the U.S.
Yeah. And who is it that mixes with the aliens? Why, a bunch of rustics.
Oh, well, yeah.
Actually,
point.
No, it's a fancy city guy from Boston.
Jeez, HP, get it right.
Yeah, come
you
on.
You don't like rustics.
You don't like rustics and women. What? Oh, no. Apparently, he doesn't like people from Boston either. Cause,
he just doesn't like a lot
Pickman,
of people.
Yeah, oh, no. I mean, you know.
Yeah, right, Pickman. Right, Pickman
Bostonian.
In Boston. And, well, there's a lot of different kinds of people in Boston.
Yeah.
Not
like all the
public.
Respectable people from Providence, Rhode Island.
What is it? The heterogeneous diaspora. That's from the terrible old man.
Yep, that is from the terrible old man.
Yeah. So, I liked it in that it was creepy and it had this really nice, like, twist at the end, and it's ominous and has it's a really well told story, which is nice.
Sure.
Yeah. And I like that it's kind of like, if you will, a clip show story.
Yeah.
Because it mentions all these other parts of the mythos.
Oh, yeah.
Within this one short story.
Sure.
Yeah. So I like that aspect of it, too.
Yeah. What's one thing that's really nice, or one thing that I have to say, and a lot of people can say about the Cthulhu mythos, is no one ever straight up says this is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's people who, like, look at all other writing now and, like, try and like make shape of it like Augie Dog Derleth did.
Sure.
And, you know, there's mythos scholars that do that, but honestly what they are when they're doing that is not being mythos scholars, they're being game designers.
Fanboys.
Well, no. It's like, oh, we got to make sense of this. We got to catalog it. And it's like, well, why? Why do we need stats? Why do we need to know how big something is if it's unnameable and undescribable?
You know what? That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Anyway, but enough about that.
Oh, yeah, and that's another thing I liked about the movie is that they had, like, bits of the whatever alien things they were.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they had that shadow, but they didn't, like, actually show one.
Well, we get into that a little bit later.
Oh, I missed that part, did I?
Yeah. I think it's, like, the CGI that they use.
Oh, the bit of CGI.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I can't remember if they used a puppet and then had to CGI over it, or if they actually just CGI'd an Amigo.
Mm.
But they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, their use of shadow of...
Suggestion
of the Amigo is pretty, pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I now agree with you that it's probably Nyarlathotep underneath that waxen mask.
Yeah.
Given the dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I noticed that in the movie, they use the same voice for Akeley as they do for the Migos on the recording.
Yeah.
So they must have thought that it was a Migo.
We talk like this.
I'm going to put more buzz into that.
Here, I'll do the buzzing. You do the talking.
I'm William Akeley.
I hope that comes out.
Yeah, me too. Or I even said the wrong name. I don't care.
William Akeley. Yeah, what is his name?
Old Man Akeley.
Old Man Akeley.
Old Empty Body.
Old old, got some guns and dogs, and stay off my property.
Old wax face.
Yeah, old, not really a person.
Old brain in a cylinder. Let's talk about the Amigo brain cylinders for a moment.
Oh my gosh, yeah, let's talk about that.
So,
do you know how many people like wish that that was a real thing?
Nowadays,
yeah,
a lot of people.
Can we talk about how Futurama kind of totally bit that?
Yeah.
With the head in jars. I mean, yeah. I always thought that it was just a part of like science fiction culture.
Yeah.
But is this like its first appearance?
To my knowledge, yeah. There might be one or two before that in like popular science, or not popular science, but like astounding stories. But
yeah,
to my knowledge, this is the earliest brain in a jar in science fiction, not in philosophy, kind of.
Interesting.
Oh, I mean, the brain in the jar kind of philosophy concept is like, if your mind as you know it, like the thinking part of you is removed and put something else, would you know it if you were given? Anyway.
Sort of a...
kind of like,
Frankenstein.
If, well, no, it's like, how do we know we're not a brain in a jar kind of thing? How do we know that we're not a...
That is a good philosophical question.
Like a mind that's stored somewhere and being given information.
Very, Matrix question.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like back in the day, people would be like, oh, brain in the jar. But nowadays you could be like, oh, mind in a simulation.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah, because, I mean, the guy in the story says that his, the brain in the jar guy says that when he's not plugged in, it's just kind of like he's sleeping.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Do you remember the Tom Cruise movie Vanilla Sky?
Didn't see it.
Oh. In Spanish, it's called Abre los Ojos.
Okay.
And he's a rich guy, and he's living a rich guy life, and then his life starts falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
He starts, like, hallucinating that his face is melted and all this weird stuff, and the girl he's in love with dies. Mm-hmm. And then this random dude shows up and says, hey, you're in a simulation, and you seem to have broken down, and now's your choice of whether or not you want to come out of this simulation and see what life is, you know, become since you've been in here, or do you want to stay in some more?
Hmm.
Yeah, and apparently he had had the simulation reset like 260 times. I haven't seen the Spanish version, but I think I would like to. They both have Penelope Cruz in it as love interest.
There's one that like predates the Tom Cruise one?
Yeah, there's a Spanish version called Abre los Ojos.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just telling me that like the name of Vanilla Sky in Spanish was this.
I don't even know how to say
like
sky.
Someone being like, oh, hey, did you know that the name of Gangs of New York in when
like,
I saw it in Prague
equipos
is Gangi
de
New York.
Equipo de New York. No, Nueva York. No. It there was a Spanish movie that was made, Abre los Ojos, and then they remade it with Tom Cruise in America, and it was called
We Need to Stay on Topic.
Sorry.
We've got
it's a really
15
beautiful,
minutes.
It's a really beautiful movie. And I like the idea of, you know, like what happens when you're in a jar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Brain in a jar. You could also call that one Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Are you talking about...
Total Recall.
Total Recall.
That's
where they implant memories?
They implant memories.
So one of the things they say in the movie anyway is that the brains in jars can travel to different planets and experience sensory input that you can't experience in your body.
Yes.
But my question, and it's a bit philosophical, is can the human brain absorb sensory input that is not... from the human body?
Well, according to some guy who got picked up in the Himalayas by the Migo, yeah, and anytime he wants, they'll just unpack his meat bod and he can walk around and do stuff.
I think he's lying about that part.
Well, probably.
I think he was sold a bill of goods, man.
Yep.
I think he's gonna get an amigo body.
Yeah, no, or possibly he's like, hey, if you get this Wilmirth guy to
get
his brain in a jar, maybe you can get his body. Who knows?
He's a lanky fella.
Yeah, and where does Nyarlathotep? Is this more like kind of like how? Is Nyarlathotep there to spread the good word with his Migos? Like, is Nyarlathotep like, hey?
Well, if the Migos are there to spread the good word, how come they want to be so secretive?
They're building something, possibly. And there's also a bit of talk in the story and in the movie about how where they're from, Yoggoth, will not be seen until they want it to be seen. And the end of the story is about Wilmarth finding, or Wilmarth learning that they've discovered a planet far, far, far off the edge of the solar system.
This is during the discovery of Pluto.
Yes.
Which is not a planet, I hear.
Cutting that part out.
Well, that's what I hear. I don't believe it.
Well, you're just talking right now because all this part's being cut out. Pluto wouldn't be seen to them until they want it to be seen. So the Migo are getting ready for something. Wilmarth has not stopped anything. And Lovecraft didn't write anymore about it, so we don't know what he entailed for to happen. But it seems to me that the Migo are planning some sort of possible invasion, some sort of massive mining operation, something.
Well, they do live in caves, so maybe mining, for sure. I mean, one of the tropes of science fiction is that aliens come to our planet because they want to...
Raw materials.
They want all the materials that our planet affords.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility, I suppose. But maybe the Migo just want our mental capacity.
Possibly.
Maybe that's why they invented, reality...
Brain cylinders?
Reality TV.
Yeah, no, I mean, what purpose do the Migo have of transporting minds of beings around the universe?
I mean, are they some sort of, like really good people? I doubt that. Philanthropy?
Yeah.
Philanthropic
no.
experience?
No, they hang out in the woods with Bostonians Waters. And shout to the... to the great old ones and the outer gods.
I doubt that that's... I mean, it's H.P. Lovecraft,
yeah.
So nobody's just given away.
No.
Yeah.
No. I don't know. It's what the hell were they doing? Hard to say. I think invasion of some sort was on way, and also spreading of their religion, making way for the return of the great old ones. Just like... I don't know. I still think Old Man Whateley... was like, oh, if I have a grandson who's part God, that'll make, it'll bring about the return of the old ones. When it's like, no. That'll be like the apostle. That'll be like the, what do you call those guys? Messiah.
The Messiah? Like the Jesus Christ guy?
Yeah, the Christ figure for that religion that people can be like, yay, it's like us, but it's also like them.
Yeah, but humans don't do that.
No, they don't. They don't. But hey,
humans are like, that human over there is nothing like me. He's not really human.
Yeah.
That's how humans are.
I know.
Okay.
But Wizard Whateley was mad. Who knows?
Maybe he was an inclusionist.
Yeah, and in Great Old Ones, they have no idea what humans are like. They're Great Old Ones.
Why would they need to know?
Yeah, of alien minds.
We're nothing but slime on the foot of the cosmos.
Yeah. But who knows? Who knows?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Indeed.
The Migo, hard to tell. Wilmarth went on to do things and continue to warn people about stuff. He warns people of the Dire Lake mission or Dire Lake exploration of the South Pole in the at the Mountains of Madness, also written by H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
So he shows up again. And,
we went over this in the episode.
Yeah. Oh, I know. But just kind of a recap. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's Albert Wilmarth.
Albert N. Wilmarth.
Yeah.
Albert No Name Wilmarth.
So, thank you for listening to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
Woohoo!
We'll see you next time. This has been Daniel and Sarah.
Sarah Fee.
Yeah, Daniel Spitzer. Next time, next episode will be about, be a King in Yellow
King
reading.
King in Yellow reading.
And then the next major episode will be about the Waits. Wait, don't tell me. We're going to be talking about...
Wait, I don't want to know.
We're going to be talking about...
The thing on the doorstep.
Well, we're going to be going into more about the people on the thing on the doorstep, into their family. We'll be talking about ones that don't live forever because they're not going to turn into fish people.
Okay.
The ones who have wives that are never seen.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Next time.
People's
Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
Remember to stay squiggly.
And keep it weird is something I'm going to say at the end of this, but I need to remember to say that. And also, that People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by BunnySlippers.com, FoundItemClothing.com. It's a member of the Dark Myths Collective, DarkMyths.org, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, PGTTCM.com, PGTTCM.podbean.com, PayPal, .me/PGTTCM, PGTTCM.threadless.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just recording all that stuff now so I can cut and paste it later.
Right, right, in case you forget.
Well, no, sense. No, actually, I just did it then, so I will have to do it later. I'll just cut and paste it off at the end.
Nice.
A music by Kevin MacLeod.